I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. Last week, Maryland Governor Wes Moore proposed $2 billion in spending cuts in his state budget presentation. The state has been projected to have $3 billion in structural deficit next year and even more in the coming years. Structural deficit refers to a situation where spending outstrips revenue projections. And because the state must have a balanced budget, unlike the federal government, which can run deficits, managing structural deficits requires real action on spending and taxes. The governor's budget proposal not only balanced the books for the next fiscal year, 25-26, but also cut in half the structural deficit in the out years. Apart from the spending cuts, he has proposed over $1.3 billion in new taxes and fees and added more money to some programs. But, as proposed, $2 billion are coming off the state spending bill, and those affected by the cuts are not happy. We will hear from many in the coming weeks, but to get a sense of what makes up the $2 billion in cuts, I spoke with Maryland House Majority Leader David Moon and Appropriations Committee member Emily Shetty. The numbers used in the episode come from the presentation provided by the Department of Legislative Services this week, clarifying the impact of the governor's proposals. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program, where you'll learn to shape public policy, impact communities, and function at the center of modern society. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society functioning, especially when we don't agree with each other. Like now. Music for this episode comes from the 1920s. Song recordings and films from a century ago just entered the public domain. The opening song is called My Doggone Lazy Man by Clara Smith, composer Jimmy Foster.
He ain't worth a salt that goes in his breath. He is one third living and three third dead.
Emily Shetty, David Moon, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Thank you.
Hey, how's it going?
The governor's budget proposals recommend $2 billion in spending cuts in total. How are you thinking about these cuts?
Any of us who was hoping for action on real action on the deficit this year knew there were going to be significant cuts, even if we were able to make the case for revenues. And so I think we're seeing that now. It's sobering. And I expect that, the governor's plan is a proposal. It comes to the House next, and House members are going to have any number of things that they might want to adjust. Now, of course, every adjustment we make to put spending back in to the budget is going to have to come with a cut or a revenue source elsewhere.
The governor is required to introduce a balanced budget by the second week of January, which he did. The budget is cash balanced, which means that he is not budgeted to spend more than the revenue projected to bring in. But the governor on the structural budget deficit side kind of came pretty close to balancing that. There's about $180 million or so that is shy of. And so If we were to meet what's the Spending and Affordability Committee, the SAC committee's guidelines for really balancing both, then we're going to need to find $180 million more of cuts or revenue. Many members in the General Assembly are having some heartburn over, and I think many of our constituents are reaching out about giant cuts in Medicaid, very large cuts in the Developmental Disabilities Administration budget, cuts to rape crisis centers, the Victims of Crime Act mandate, $10.8 million cut there. The spending reductions, as sort of put by the Department of Legislative Services, can be broken down into a couple of different buckets. The first largest is not doing an appropriation to the Rainy Day Fund, which is the fund that we rely upon during times of economic downturn. So that's about $420 million. And then the second biggest is the increased in the Medicaid hospital assessment. So that's a deficit assessment that hospitals pay. It's sort of captured in part by the margins that hospitals bring in when they bill for their services, but it is largely covered by ratepayers. So it's captured, it's sort of recalculated into the rate that a hospital can bill patients in Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance, and so in private insurance. And so all of us will end up carrying the cost there for that. And the reason it comes out as kind of like a savings or cost containment measure is that Medicaid is partially reimbursed at the federal level. So we'll be able to get reimbursement for that, which would then bring in cost containment to the state budget.
How much is that?
$138.8 million okay. is the proposal. And then the third biggest item is the a reduction in the state's share of K-12 teacher retirement benefits. So this is a shift to local communities to cover that.
What about the blueprint? There are some adjustments to the blueprint.
One of the major things that the governor is proposing is that we permanently reduce the mandate for the Consortium on Coordinated Community Supports. This is a large pot of money annually. It's $130 million that funds mostly community-based, but in some instances, school-based mental health, behavioral health support for students. These are, you know, a lot of students who didn't have access or don't have easy access to behavioral health. This consortium dollars were actually used for this current fiscal year, was it helped launch the ability of our state to be able to provide reimbursement for the delivery of behavioral health services on school grounds by Medicaid providers. So Medicaid could then bill for it. It's because of this pool of funds that we were able to do that in the state. We're the 26th state that is now authorized this and have launched that program.
And that's $90 million or so, is that?
Yeah, about $90 million cut. They are permanent, so every year. Then another proposal would delay from this fiscal year to FY30, the start of funding for teacher collaboration time. This has been something that, you know, was a big pillar within the blueprint. It costs money because you have to have more teachers, right, to be able to cover the time that the teacher's not in the classroom. And the governor is proposing we sort of push that on a bit. The other things that there's some changes proposed to the base funding formula that would impact community schools. It would impact multi-language learners as well.
Can I also ask you what the impact is for this plan to limit the scholarship for pre-K?
The current scholarships fund up to about 70% of the average cost based on like the regional costs for childcare. What the governor is proposing to do is drop that percentage down to 50%. The number that I'm seeing is that there's a $30 million proposed cut for FY26. I will also say that there's a note in here that there's a 100 and 17-ish million dollar deficiency appropriation, which means that the FY25, so the current fiscal year's anticipated spending, is 117 million over what was actually appropriated. So we're going to be doing a deficiency appropriation and kind of paying that back. And so we are waiting to get numbers on the number of providers and families that that could impact.
I will also point out that there are other bills in motion and that are being discussed this session that may mitigate some of this. I believe Chair Barnes is introducing a bill to allow more seats to be housed in some of these programs, also to try and reduce costs. So we'll have to see how this all plays out. But needless to say, child care and some of these other cuts impacting the workforce are going to be in the forefront of people's scrutiny as we work on the budget.
It seems that the governor is making some serious cuts in disability support, both to the Developmental Disability Administration. We already talked about the cuts to mental health support in community-based and school-based settings. There is also some cuts to non-public school assignments for special needs students. What are you saying?
So it's very hard to make any predictions or promises on specific line items with a budget this large and complicated. However, I will say that if you follow the press as closely as I do, you will see leaders in both the House and Senate have indicated some level of discomfort with the developmental disability cuts. And so I would not be surprised to see some effort to restore some of the services spending there. And likewise, I don't know what the future holds on the blueprint cuts and delays, but various stakeholders in our public school system are weighing in on aspects of it. The Black Caucus, for example, immediately pointed to community school funding cuts that you just noted as their priority for budget restoration. Again, I can't promise how this shakes out, but everybody's making their lists at the moment. And we can't do all of them, right? And this is the trick here. Each of these is still millions of dollars that we have to make up somewhere else. But again, if I was a betting person, the disability cuts and crime victim rape crisis center cuts are going to be ones we've heard many people talking about.
I have some numbers I can share. So on the DDA side, the Developmental Disabilities Administration, the governor's budget requests $97 million cut for this fiscal year, so FY25, to cut the current allotted budgeted amount that would be spent before July 1. They want to cut that. And they are proposing in the next fiscal year, the one that we're actually like focused on the budget for starting in July, $235 million for FY26.
How is it even possible to cut for this year? I mean, what are they going to do? Just get rid of people or curtail programs?
It's hard to know exactly what their plan is for FY25. Some programs that they're, for example, proposing to cut, there's a program that provides low intensity support services. This is a program that supports individuals with developmental disabilities who are seeking to live independently, and it allows them to buy things to help them do that. So this is not medical, right? It's like added supports, things like maybe you need an air fryer so that you can cook safely at home so that you're not living in an institutional setting, right? Which is a significantly costlier option. The proposed cut to that would free up $5.5 million. That's like one example of the things that they are looking to do.
Moving on to the cost shifting to counties, there is some monies for the teacher retirement pension. There is some money that the counties will have to pay for. Are some counties disproportionately impacted?
You see a large lion's share coming from Montgomery County. That's not entirely surprising, to be honest, because we are the most populated and one of the wealthiest counties as well. And so you do see a big shift to Montgomery County.
If counties are going to pay for all property assessment costs, why not just give them that function?
That's a good question. I don't know the details of the policy change that is being requested here.
Property assessment shifts onto the counties, possible pension shifts onto the counties, again, being proposed by the governor's plan. But there are other savings for the counties with some of the school costs and delay. Cuts and delays, and there are any number of county proposals this year that have not yet had a decision about revenue. So multiple counties are in with various proposals to grant them additional revenue-seeking authorities.
David, can you give some examples of what revenue bills from the counties are in front of you?
For a couple of years now, Montgomery County has been seeking differential taxing authority for commercial properties. And I don't want to speak for the county. I think they're contemplating, transit development district and things of that nature that we've seen in other jurisdictions. I think Anne Arundel was looking at differential property tax proposals at various points. The Maryland Municipal League, which represents the cities, is looking for a municipal add-on tax of up to a few percent for, I believe, restaurant and bar, so amusement. They're tacking this into the amusement tax. And so we'll see, So some of these, some items in the governor's plan would put additional costs on local governments. Other elements might save costs. And then you've got these revenue proposals in the mix. And I think this is all going to shake out into a balance to try and if folks can be made whole on some items, I think everyone would like to do that. But we're obviously in deficit time, so we'll see.
Right. Now, the governor has also proposed some additional spending in certain categories. So the net of the spending cuts is really in the $1.3 billion range. What is he adding?
There are some items where I think, given recent policy debates, it was going to be difficult to cut. And certainly you're seeing additions, corrections. We've been sued for inadequate health care. There's been ongoing protests and incidents with overstaffing in corrections. We had a huge debate about how to service juveniles in the last year, especially those who are running into trouble with the law. And so that's another area where it just would have been really difficult to look at that, even with the deficit, and say, oh, we're going to turn around and enact cuts. So I think in a few places like that, as well as economic development, where you don't want to do nothing, right, given the stagnant economic growth in the state. And so you see some places like that. There are a few other places where I think the governor has proposed additional spending for some of his own programs he's created and things of that nature. That was true last year, too. So again, this is all a conversation. So we'll see how everybody's priorities shake out when we actually have to pull the trigger.
Adding to what the majority leader said, the Enough Act was a big priority of the governor last year. It aims to do a targeted address of child poverty and try to eliminate it. It's a big priority of the governor. He has put in $23 million of additional grants to fund that. And then as David said, there are a number of different grant projects, capital projects, and different sort of things that are sprinkled in to help, pursue what he's calling his growth agenda.
The governor has proposed a bunch of revenue measures, especially driven by his ideas about economic growth. Is the balance where you want it to be?
Well, I can't speak really for myself here, since this is going to end up being a work product of the House and the Speaker and the Democratic majority in large measure. But what I can say is there's sort of layers of decisions that came down with the governor's plan, right? By and large, it was a decision to take the first $3 billion of deficit coming up and deal with that. There's implied decision to deal with the other $3 billion later, right? So that's one stage of conversation here. But from where we were last year, that's quite a bit of progress. So how we deal with that $3 billion in the short run, obviously, that's where the devil's in the details. But, you know, it's $2 billion of cuts, roughly, and $1 billion and some change in revenues. So it's a 2-to-1 ratio of cuts to revenue. And that still puts us in a situation where we're cutting disability, childcare, right, mental health, school funding, and shifting things to local governments. So it's tough, and it's highly likely to change. But I do think, as we had asked for last year, to actually have a serious discussion about the budget, the governor has met that challenge. This is a serious plan. It's very thorough, right? It goes through agency by agency and tries to identify changes that, at least in his view, are where we want to go. And of course, there were going to be questions that folks would have about this, that, and the other in the plan. You know, and happy to flag any of those. But I have to applaud the governor for actually putting together a very serious plan. And at the moment, he's campaigning on it. He's running around trying to explain it. There's a lot on social media that he's put out to flag various items. And so at the moment, it appears he's owning it and working it. And so I look forward to the conversation.
Emily?
I will say that, you know, I don't think that the revenue options that are presented here are the only ones that we can or should consider.
What are we missing?
I think there are a lot of things that we might be able to bring back. The House proposed a number of different items that were considered last year. House voted out a number of items that would have helped address the budget deficit that I don't see here.
Examples?
Like iGaming, for example, was one. And we had others, I'm sure, that I haven't done a side-by-side comparison, and David might have that list already handy somewhere, but
there is some gaming money in the revenue side, as far as I remember.
Right. So what he is proposing is increasing the tax rate on existing gaming methods. So like sports wagering, table games, like these are existing taxed gaming. So moving it from like 15 to 30% for sports wagering, 20 to 25% for table games. Like these are reasonable proposals, I think, for us to be thinking about. And then on iGaming, though, so actually bringing in revenue for gaming that you do on your phone, right, that people are doing, but sending revenue overseas into other states that have iGaming legislation passed, like we're just losing out on all of that revenue from Marylanders that are playing these games already. So I think having the ability to have that in state could make a meaningful difference as well.
Anything else?
Well, some things we haven't considered. I have a bill that I'm working on that would maybe bring in like $500 million of revenue. I'm not quite ready to share the details yet. I want the language back from drafting, but I don't think...
Well, for $500 million, Alex.
I'm holding my cards close for a moment.
And we have tons of bills that we heard last session, and we're going to have a ton of revenue bills heard this session, including from Republicans. So I think you have to take the governor's proposal plus any edits that we make to it, and then factor in there's likely to be any number of other creative proposals that we see heard. I'll just point to one example. We had a Republican last session who brought in a bill to jack up a massive increase in hunting permit fees for out-of-state residents coming in to hunt a very rare type of deer. I had never heard of this, but that thing started moving. We passed it, right? I think we did.
Well, out of the House. I don't know what the Senate did, but we did.
All right. So there are some things that the budget does not directly consider. One of them is the Trump administration exposure. The second thing, according at least to the Department of Legislative Services, is the child abuse case liability burden. Now, how are you guys thinking about that?
Well, on my end, I think it's, I'll start with the second one, the child abuse cases. So it's difficult for us to get a handle on what the potential liability could be. I mean, I think we know how many cases have been filed, and we know how many, what the upward limit of each case award could be. But we don't know how that will shake out in settlement negotiations. And so we're keeping a close eye on the issue. We're receiving info from the AG as they're able to share it, right? They can't share details, obviously, of settlement negotiations until they're final. And so once we have that, I think we'll be able to figure in numbers and work it out. On the other item that you said, on the Trump administration, we have been deep in the weeds on different parts of the budget that could be impacted by the Trump administration's potential plans. It's tough to really predict how to budget for that when we don't have details on exactly what they're going to do. We did have a briefing by DLS with the Appropriations Committee last week on the threat to Medicaid. And there are about four or five different options of ways things could go, including potentially like block grants that would completely change the way in which we operate our Medicaid program. I'll also just note that it is not uncommon for us in the middle of session to get updated Board of Revenue estimate numbers that project budget write-downs. Right, based upon the economic data that they're seeing, based upon income taxes that have been filed, et cetera. So we will get that estimate in March, and that could again cause additional heartburn for us as we're moving through. But this has happened the last couple of legislative sessions, and we always work it out. So it's going to be tougher even still with a structural deficit on the horizon as well. And so we'll put our heads down and do the work.
All of this just leads me back to the same conclusion, which is that there is no better time than now for Maryland to try and become hyper self-reliant in terms of future economic growth. So obviously we have to play to the strength of our federal institutions and keep doing things like jockeying for the FBI headquarters relocation. But at the same time, you look at the economic data, Maryland sort of lagging national growth, lagging regional growth, shrinking population 3 out of the last 4 years. All of these are alarming signs that we've got to broaden our tax base so that we're not squeezing more money out of a shrinking number of people and businesses. So I think how we do that with fewer and fewer funds is going to be one of the overlay challenges on this whole budget situation. And again, you see the governor making some attempts to address this with some of the spending economic development programs he's trying to put in the mix, even as we hack $2 billion out of our state budget.
Well, he would argue that his middle-class tax cut does that. I'm told the Key Bridge is safe for now, that it is not covered by the executive order on the Infrastructure Act spending that has been now stopped for all practical purposes. Is there anything you want to flag?
Sure, there's lots of things. I mean, the direct and indirect spending by the federal government, we're just going to have to keep monitoring the key bridge funding threat that we saw over the holiday break was just our first taste of the seesaw I think we can expect from Congress on these funding issues. So we are going to have to get a handle on that, again, pointing to my conclusion that we have to get hyper self-reliant as all of these things are going on. Let me reiterate, this is the governor's plan. This is not the assembly plan. This is not the state Democrats' plan. This is the governor's plan. So we'll see how these items all fare as they go through the legislative process. And I know the blueprint has always been the trickiest part for the House to get behind. And, you know, as Speaker and Chair Appropriations Chair Barnes have said, the House is going to have a very high bar for these types of blueprint changes. Also, on the rainy day fund reduction, I just want to say it's not any sort of reduction that harms our ability to weather future storms. It's still well above recommendations. But other than that, really awesome detail from Delegate Jetty.
David Moon, Emily Shetty, thank you for taking the time.
Thank you for having us.
What lessons can we draw from my conversation with Maryland House Democratic Majority Leader David Moon and House Appropriations Committee member Emily Shetty? First, if you are concerned that the numbers we brought up do not total the $2 billion mark, it would be an interesting and correct observation. In introducing the budget, the governor made the point that the cuts are narrowly targeted. But it does seem that the spending cuts he has proposed are spread out across the government. If you take one example of the cuts in the disability arena, for example, the low-impact assistance, Emily Shetty used the example of air fryers to make independent living possible for some folks with disabilities. That is really cheaper than having to pay for assisted living. It will take many, many $5 million cuts to reach the $235 million slated to be cut in the fiscal year 2026. These cuts have to come from a lot of places. Second, Majority Leader David Moon and Democrats in the legislature, both chambers, point out that the blueprint is funded through next year. So resetting blueprint requirements is really about the out years when the general fund has to contribute monies to the blueprint fund. But consider, the biggest savings comes from the delay in teacher collaboration time, which requires thousands of more teachers to be hired. With a national teacher shortage, this is paper ambition. Where are the teachers to hire? This is a delay that makes a lot of sense at this moment. But with economic growth highly uncertain for several years now, it is likely as well not to happen, and a central plank of the blueprint plan may never be nailed down. The expected gains from the rest of the measures are going to be less effective as a result, putting us back in the land of the Thornton Commission, which also promised educational excellence and then failed to persuade state leaders to fund it. Third, there's going to be considerable pushback to the governor's spending cuts. Maryland is extraordinarily well organized in its civic and advocacy organizations. These groups are highly focused and generally quite effective. They have the ears of lawmakers. The problem is that if lawmakers want to restore some cuts, they will have to find the money elsewhere. In this push and pull, expect the most organized and the most networked groups to succeed and others to lose. This is a show called I Hate Politics, a zeitgeist that believes political participation is not worth the time and the aggravation. Those who hate politics and don't participate will see politics hate them back and ignore them. So the lesson is, participate politically even if you don't want to. We will continue to bring you news and analysis to help you succeed. but you have to use it. That's all for this episode of I Hate Politics, where we aim to stem the decline in local news by working with community voices. Don't forget to tune in to our Tuesday morning news analysis. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from a century ago and newly entered the public domain. This song by the Troubadours is called Deep in My Heart, Dear, written by Dorothy Donnelly and Sigmund Romberg. Usually, we feature local music on the show. If you want to share your music or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. I hope you'll subscribe and share the podcast as we bring you stories about politics close to you and to your home. See you next time.